Hi, and welcome to the Horizon Church podcast. Horizon Church is a Christ-centered, word-based, and spirit-led church. We are so happy to bring this week's message to you, and on behalf of our pastors, Brad and Ali Bonhomme, and the Horizon Church team, we pray it's a blessing to you.
It is great to see you. Things are going super well at St. Andrew's. And one of the great highlights is just seeing some of our phenomenal people from Sutherland who've been sent out there and a whole bunch of amazing leaders that were out there already just flourishing and doing their thing and being unlocked in their call and their gift. And it really has been a phenomenal journey and will continue to be. So I wanted to, I guess before I get into the word tonight, tell you a little bit about when I began learning to drive. And I know there's many new P-platers in the room, and I know Tori got her P-plates recently, and there's a whole lot of others that have been getting their P-plates, and I cannot begin to tell you how much of a dinosaur that makes me feel. Because I remember learning to drive, and I remember getting my license, and my first car was a 1988 white Corolla Seeker with beautiful grey velour seats. It was really beautiful, was really looked after, and you know, who knows, you look after what God gives you really well, regardless of, you know, I'd prefer the newer model or whatever. I looked after this thing, but I remember my friend Rachel, who I went to school with, giving me a Gregory's roadmap, because there's no such thing as GPSs and iPhones and all sorts of things back then. I remember dangerously as a learner driver, and thank God this thing was an automatic, this car, sitting in the car driving as a learner driver, a P-plater, with this Gregory's on my lap trying to navigate my way around the city of Sydney. And I was adventurous, I'd go places, but with this red Gregory's, I think I still have it for old time's sake, trying to navigate my way. Well, life got even more interesting when I decided I wanted to buy a manual, but I didn't know how to drive a manual. And so I remember agreeing to buy this manual that was relatively new but not brand new, and it was a beautiful jade green Ford Festiva. Anyone else ever own a Ford Festiva? And everyone in my generation, first-ish cars were Ford, if you were a girl, that is. Ford Festivas. Andrew had a Subaru. He was cool. He was really cool. The roof may have been caving in as well, and he had guys in the car that were wrecking it. But girls had Ford Festivas or Starlets, Toyota Starlets, right? So this Ford Festiva, I remember purchasing it and being dropped off. I can't even remember how I got to the place I was buying it from, somewhere over near Homebush, taking my Gregory's under my arm and getting in this manual car. And I had not learnt to drive a manual, but I had a good sense of how it may work. And putting the Gregory's on my lap, not a word of a lie. This is so bad. Do not take a leaf out of my book, okay? Parents, do not let your kids do this. And driving, and dare I say, bunny hopping this thing all the way home, stalling it at every light, meanwhile trying to read the Gregory's to get out of where I was. This was actually also before the Bengal Bypass was built. So you know the Warrinora Bridge thing? Anyone remember the hairpin bends? I stalled that Ford Festiva on every bend. Thankfully, I didn't need the Gregory's at that point. I was kind of home. Well, in 2006, I upgraded to a brand new Mazda 3, which I still own to this day. And except for a bit of hail damage last year when the kids were in the car on that hailstorm, it's in great nick and so forth. So beautiful car, have loved driving this since 2006. And GPS has started to come on the market around that time as well. And so I had a GPS and then later an iPhone, and I could actually find my way around the city of Sydney using that rather than the Gregory's and nearly killing myself in the process. And so I lived in the city for a little while. I worked over at North Sydney, and I remember going places and in my Mazda feeling really proud and putting the GPS on and stuff. But I noticed that in the city, because of just too many signals, too much noise, too much pressure, the GPS would get scrambled. So I'd often find myself having misadventured down back alleys and back streets, discovering new coffee, running late for things, because the GPS and later the iPhone couldn't handle the pressure of the competing signals. Now, when it comes to your life, God actually wants to take you to a destination. Now, many times in my life, the counsel of the Holy Spirit and good leaders in my life has been, don't get destination disease, right? I can be fixated on where I need to go, and they're like, no, the journey is just as important. But tonight I actually do want to say to you, God has a destination that he wants to take you to. God actually has for your life an assignment, a direction, a sense of purpose. You may be in and out of feeling that that's true, but God actually, as well as wanting to shape you in the process and do the journey well with you, he actually does have a destination, an assignment, a sense of purpose, and an outcome that he has planned for your life. And regardless of the bumpiness of the journey, there is a destination he wants to take you to. However, in the middle, there is pressure. And I know Pastor Brad has been preaching about in the middle, and I just think it's a phenomenal thing to look at. What happens in the middle that God wants to do to shape you and mold you? Because in the middle, there is pressure, and pressure to deviate your course, pressure to go off course, pressure to get distracted from the original purpose and intention, pressure to compromise your principles to get an outcome, pressure on the compass needle of your life. If your life has a compass, and it does, and it should be set on due north, Jesus Christ, there is pressure that comes on that compass needle at various times in the middle to pull it incrementally, 1 degree, 2 degree off it, so you are not going to reach your destination, and the signals are scrambled in the middle. You know, tonight I actually do want to talk about pressure. I actually want to speak to this whole area of feeling under pressure. Andrew and I, on one of our date nights at home, woohoo, parents, you know, anytime your kid goes to sleep at 7 p.m. and you can go and watch a movie on the odd occasion is a good night, and that's a date night for us at the moment. But we watched a movie called Greyhound. Has anyone seen that movie? I can actually hand on heart recommend it. It's got nothing dodgy in it, unless there's another version, the French version. So there's a film... there's no French version of it. There is a film called Greyhound, and in this film, and Andrew and I kind of meet on war. He doesn't like rom-com. I don't really like sport, although I'm getting into Jurgen Klopp. Anyone into Liverpool? Yeah, Jurgen Klopp is the coach of Liverpool FC, and I am a fan. And we are going to read a book about Jurgen Klopp on our holidays. So it's going to be a point of meeting halfway. And so we do meet on the topic of war. We are kind of warmongers. We kind of enjoy war movies, not really warmongers. But there's this, in this movie, this commander, Ernest Krauss, is charged with the assignment, and it's his first assignment, his first Atlantic crossing, and he is charged at captaining a destroyer that will accompany a convoy of essential supplies, of men for the war effort, for food and all sorts of things to keep people alive. But what has happened in the North Atlantic is a pack of German U-boats had been taking out the ships carrying these supplies, and so he had been charged with the assignment to take this destroyer and take out the U-boats so that these essential supplies would make it to the other side of the Atlantic. But along the way, there is pressure. There is cold. It is bitterly cold in the North Atlantic, and you watch the scenes of him, you know, being on outside in the ship, you know, helping navigate it, helping to do what he needs to do. And he's fatigued. He's coming under the pressure of the fatigue, and he's the pressure of chasing down an unseen enemy, because it's all under the water. It's the pressure of actually dodging, being on high alert the whole mission against torpedo attacks and so forth. He is under pressure. And at one point in this journey, the German U-boat pack, the wolf pack that is actually near him, actually breaks open the airwaves, or gets onto the frequency that Greyhound, this destroyer, is on, and begins to just how insults at the troops on this destroyer begins to intimidate and mock and taunt. And look, who knows, any time that happens is like it's pressure. But imagine being in the middle of the North Atlantic in basically a tin tub, nowhere to escape to, and you are hearing the howls and the taunts and the insults of the enemy. You know, it reminded me of the book of Nehemiah and how Nehemiah himself was charged with an assignment. God actually stirred his heart to actually rebuild the wall of Jerusalem. And maybe God has stirred your heart with a dream. Maybe God has given you a preferred picture of your future. Maybe in the recesses of your heart and imagination, God has planted a picture of what the future looks like, what the future could be. It's exactly what happened to Nehemiah. God put something in his heart that Nehemiah desired it, but really God gives us the desires of our heart because he plants them because they're about a kingdom purpose. But along the way, he encounters pressure. So he goes to do what is a God-given task. It's not something he's made up, but he encounters pressure on the needle of his life to throw him off course from the destination God had intended. So as well as the fatigue, so you can imagine what it's like to carry that kind of burden for a broken nation that are in exile, to carry the burden of getting resources for that, to carry the burden of all sorts of things, fatigue, the people, doubting, can this even be done? You know, your own people. And there is pressure at every point with mockery of the enemy, false accusation, intimidation, and would you believe it, even spiritual manipulation, people sounding like they're giving you something from God, but actually it's actually a ploy of the enemy to throw you off. You know, in the beginning of the assignment, he is pressurized. You know, it's really interesting. It says in Nehemiah 2:10, when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite officially heard about this, they were very much disturbed that someone had come to promote the welfare of the Israelites. Isn't it interesting? At the beginning of your journey, at the beginning of a dream, how the enemy would want to abort that thing because he knows it is about, not just about you, but it is about the welfare of a city, a family, a nation. You don't know what your dream, whose welfare is attached to your dream, and why the enemy wants to disrupt it is because it's actually going to do something good in the world. But as well as that, they actually pressurize and disrupt during the work. It says in Nehemiah 4:1, when Sanballat heard that they were rebuilding the wall, he became angry and was greatly incensed. He ridiculed the Jews, and in the presence of his associates in the army of Samaria, you know, he was the man around his friends, he said, what are those feeble Jews doing? Will they restore their wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they finish in a day? Can they bring the stones back to life from that heap of rubble, burned as they are? Tobiah the Ammonite, who was at his side, said, what are they building? Even a fox climbing up on it would break down the wall of their stones. So in the middle, pressure comes on with mockery and taunting. And then finally, even in the completion, there is pressure. Nehemiah 6, 1 to 2 says, when the word came to Sanballat, Tobiah, Geshem, the Arab, the rest of our enemies that had rebuilt the wall and not a gap was left in it, though up to that time I had not set the doors and the gates, Sanballat and Geshem sent me this message, come let us meet together in one of the villages on the plains of Ono. Oh no. But they were scheming to harm me. Pressure. You know, your life is on purpose. Not one person, regardless of the circumstance of your conception, no matter what your family was like, no matter what you are feeling at the moment, every single person in this room, you are on purpose. You are actually on purpose, and the enemy hates it. Because you look like God. Every single one of you are made in the image of God. Every single one of you has a destination to reach, an assignment to do. You may feel feeble. You may feel like the wall of your life, man, a fox could jump on this and it could fall down right now. I'm feeling so fragile, but you are on purpose. And pressure will come because of it. Isn't it great to know that sometimes pressure coming on is a good indication that you are going in the right direction oftentimes? And distraction will come to take you off direction God has called you to. Pressure and bombardment in your thought life. You know, if you look at World War I and you look at the tactics the enemy had to bombard the trenches and waves of bombardment, I really see at times the enemy can bring pressure on our thought life, bombarding us with all sorts of perverse images or questions about what people think, or a bombardment on your thought life. And the external pressure of circumstances, and of course this particular chapter that we're in as a nation and a world, has been the external pressure of finances, of perhaps bullying in your school, of home life, of changes in circumstance. Well, I want to say tonight, if you are feeling under pressure, you are not alone. Every single person made in the image of God that was destined by Him with a great assignment, with something to complete, with a great hope in their future, came under pressure. Jesus Himself came under pressure in the Garden of Gethsemane. Deborah, O mighty woman, came under pressure to actually lead into battle, to face an enemy that had been a tormentor. And Nehemiah, doing a great work in God, came under pressure, doing the very thing God had called him to do. You're not alone. So tonight, I want to talk very briefly on how to handle pressure. And then we're going to worship for a few minutes, and I believe God is actually going to lift pressure off lives. So firstly, pressure pressed him, Nehemiah, to prayer. Pressure pressed him to prayer. You know, throughout the completion of the journey of the wall, he came under pressure, under incredible pressure, taunts, mockery, resource pressure, you know, coming up with stress to strategy, all sorts of things. And at every single stage in the journey, it records that Nehemiah's weapon of choice when he's facing pressure was prayer. It says in Nehemiah 6:9, they were all trying to frighten us, thinking their hands will get too weak for the work and it will not be completed. Can I just say, I really feel someone in the room has heard that this week, like you're going to fail at what you're doing. Your hands are going to be too weak. And it's pretty telling that there's a scripture about it. That is not your voice. That is somebody else's voice coming against you. And this is Nehemiah's response to it. But I prayed, now strengthen my hands. He didn't take on the enemy and say, no, you're wrong. My hands are awesome. My work is awesome. I've got skills. But he actually said, now, Lord, I'm not going to even take it up with the enemy. I'm not even going to come into agreement with that thought. I'm not even going to fight it on a carnal level. I am actually going to ask you, Lord, to strengthen my hands for the task. You know, Nehemiah recognized the opposition and he relied on a power much greater. He didn't engage the opposition. Maybe you tonight, though, as I talk about prayer, immediately go, oh my gosh, that discourages me already because I feel like my prayer life's pretty average or really poxy. But I want to encourage you that prayer could look like this for you. Let me give you some examples. I remember when I was teaching out Sydney Southwest, driving that little Ford Festiva and my little tan briefcase in the back with marking and all this sort of thing. And I remember some of my greatest times with God, and I do believe in shutting the cupboard door, getting into the prayer closet, having designated times with God. But I tell you what, some of the most saturated times I had were putting my worship music on in the car and praying. And I'd drive home via Heathcote Road rather than the M5 to have a bit longer with the Lord, to have a bit of a longer trip so I could be in His presence. I remember cancelling carpools because I'm like, I just need to get into God's presence before and after school. I remember a young career person in our ranks here sharing with me that she felt like at work God was saying, come away with me just for a few minutes. There's a big decision about to be made and you need to pray before the pressure comes on. And she shut herself in a boardroom in her workplace and sought God. I remember being in my grandparents' bunk room. They had a bunk room out in their garage and we'd often stay, and I was with a friend and she was a Christian too. And I just said, we're late at night about to go to sleep. I reckon we should pray before we, let's just pray together, and we just began praying, and minutes turned into hours, and the presence of God filled that pokey little bunk room, you know, in a really adverse place, because my grandpa was incredibly critical. It was not pleasant to be there, but I remember the presence of God descending in that bunk room. And I remember also a woman in our St. Andrew's campus, an amazing woman, amazing testimony. She shared with me, she remembered coming to Jesus, or not even sure if he existed, but crying out to him in a really obscure little Serbian village, and God meeting her right where she was at on the back of her honest prayer. You know, if you are weakening in prayer, get a friend to pray with you. Get one of our pastors to pray with you. Make a start. Offer God something small. But don't not pray because you can't yet pray for 2 or 4 or 8 hours. Don't not pray. Give him what you have and let your minutes grow into hours, grow into days, grow into a lifestyle of prayer. Let the pressure press you to prayer. Secondly, pressure pressed him to purpose. You know, it's interesting with this, everything going on, of course, people have been sick, and that has been pretty hideous. And of course, people have suffered economic losses, and that has been really scary and concerning. And I know people that are going through things like that. But probably one of the single most heinous things I've seen about what's going on is that the hijacking of purpose, particularly in young people, like almost like this disruption, this almighty disruption is there to steal purpose. And it's like the pressure has pushed people to abandon plans, dreams, and God-assigned purpose, almost like the rules don't apply right now. You know, God doesn't have an assignment of purpose. Everything's been stuffed up and I just throw it all away. Well, that is actually not how it works in God. The assignment never changed. Just because Nehemiah came under pressure and mocking did not change the assignment, did not change the promise of God. And it's a key strategy in Nehemiah that they would distract him from purpose. Here's his response, Nehemiah 6, 2 to 4. Sanballat and Geshem sent me this message. Come, let us meet in one of the villages on the plain of Ono. But they were scheming to harm me. So I sent messengers to them. He doesn't even give them the time of day to go and meet them. He sends messengers to them with this reply. I'm carrying on a great project. You are carrying on a great project and cannot go down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and go down to you? 4 times. You know, if the enemy doesn't get you the first time, if the distraction doesn't take you out, it will come back and you have to resolve. 4 times they sent me the same message and each time I gave them the same answer. It doesn't get fancier or more complex. You just stick to your guns. You just resolve. You will not leave. You need to resolve and resolve again. Let the pressure drive your purpose deeper. Don't let the pressure take the compass off your due north. Don't let the pressure come onto the compass needle of your life and shake it. You say to the thing, no, I am doing a good work. Yes, I'm under pressure. Yes, I'm struggling, but you know what? The compass will stay on due north. When you're under pressure with temptation, just because we're in a pandemic doesn't mean that young people don't go through the pressure of sexual temptation. And sometimes there's a psychology that says, you know, there is a pandemic on. I don't need to live for God right now. When it gets normal, I will. No, live for God now because the assignment and the purpose never change. When you're under the pressure, if you're married, to walk away from your marriage. When you're under the pressure to cut corners in your integrity, don't do it. Keep the compass needle on due north of your life. You know, recently my husband jokingly said to one of our St. Andrew's team members, you know, being married to Christine, he said it lovingly, is being like strapped to a rocket and holding on, which is not strictly true. He was being hyperbolic, okay? But I thought about it and I thought, you know what, being married to Andrew is like being connected to someone of principle and conviction and steadiness. And I look at my life over the last 6 years that we've been married and being connected to a man of principle and love and gentleness and steadiness has built our family, has shaped the character, the emerging character of our boys. And even in times of pressure, because it comes on in every single life and marriage, none of us are immune from it, but it builds a life. Let pressure press you into your purpose. Don't let it take you away. And then finally, he is the man, my husband, and he's taken. But he's got good friends and he's a very good judge of character, girls, if you want some advice. He's like going to kill me afterwards. All right. He says that I'm not getting up at St. Andrews. I've been used in too many sermon illustrations. Now I'm really getting killed. All right. And then finally, pressure, and I'll get the keys up. Pressure pressed him to prevail. You know, generally the pattern of the life of a believer goes like this. You come to Jesus, you get a deep sense of call, and when God calls you, you are full of promise. I remember, all through my life, different stages of the call developing, but at 16, God, I will go to the nations for you. He'd captivated my heart with a picture of what could be a preferred future. Lord, I'll lay my life down for you. And the call is captivating. But in the middle, there's the journey. And then there's completion, of course. But nobody, when they're called, rarely do we perceive that there will be pressure and opposition between the calling and the completion. Rarely do we perceive that, you know, what will be involved in actually doing the will of God. You know, some of us live under this misassumption that if we're in the will of God, it'll just be awesome and peaceful and lovely and no struggle. I just have not found that. I've just not found that to be the way that God unfolds a calling in the man or woman of God. Usually, actually, I've seen the ones that are used the most powerfully by God seem to go through some of the most difficult pressures to shape them. It's almost like the refining fire and what the hand of God allows often. So if you're going through trouble and strife and pressure, sometimes there can be real condemnation and like, God, am I even in your will? I want to say to you, lift that condemnation off yourself. Give it to the Lord, because oftentimes he will allow greater pressure. You know, sometimes we can be blindsided. Maybe we take it to mean God's not with me. Or maybe we fear failure in the middle. You know, I'm under so much pressure. God called me, but like, am I going to fail? At this? Is this going to work? Is God actually really going to come through for me? Am I really going to be able to overcome this? That's some of the questions that come with the pressure. But pressure and opposition are a given. What if you would not fail? You cannot fail. What if ultimately, like Nehemiah, what if the promise of God to you is ultimately there will be trials along the way, there'll be many failures along the way, there'll be, you know, though a righteous person fall down seven times, they will rise again. Ultimately, what if you cannot fail? That is the promise of God to you. You know, because it says in Nehemiah, after 52 days of focus building efforts, intense opposition, security threats, heart-rending criticisms and mockery, and then following decades of more reforms, the wall was completed. The task that God called him to, despite the pressure, the mockery, the disturbances, despite the middle, the wall was completed. What if you can't fail? What if you just let the compass needle stay on north, come what may? People may leave you. People may really be cruel. People, their mockery may come, the pressure may come. But if you keep your compass needle on north, what if you can't fail? What if you can't fail? Nehemiah 6 says, so the wall was completed on the 25th of Elul in 52 days. when all the enemies heard about this, and I love this bit, it's like in your face, all the surrounding nations were afraid and lost their self-confidence. Even your enemies, God will even overcome your enemies because they realized that this work had been done with the help of our God. The fruit was there just because through the pressure, through the storm, through the intense stuff he went through, he just kept his compass needle on north. I have a good work to do. It's real simple. It's not rocket science. He built a wall. He just kept the compass needle on north. And I might get the band up. I just really feel to read this over us. I really think that there's people in the room and I want to read this over your life. And then we're actually just going to go into a couple of minutes of worship because I believe God wants to take some pressure off and encourage some people. I want to read this over you. Psalm 46, 4-7. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy place where the Most High dwells. God is within her. She will not fail. God will help her at break of day. Nations are in uproar. Kingdoms fall. He lifts his voice. The earth melts. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Why don't you stand on your feet? I feel two things tonight. If you've been under pressure, there is relief in his presence. You know, there is always his presence. You know, David said, it didn't make any sense to me until I went into the house of the Lord. You know, there is just sometimes when, and you may go back into the pressured situation, but there is relief in the presence of God. And I think for some, as you worship, just for a couple of minutes, I just see God resetting the compass needle of your life and bringing you back to your true north.
Thanks for listening to this week's message. For more info about Horizon Church, please visit our website at hz.church. Have a fantastic day and we hope to see you again.